Makeshift Stories is now available on Stitcher Radio on demand. Download the free mobile app today and listen to us anywhere, anytime. There's no more syncing, no downloading, and no wasted memory.
Makeshift Stories presents Somewhere, Sometime, an irregular series of short sci-fi and fantasy stories.
There appears to be a growing interest in funding human space exploration as commercial ventures. From mining the asteroids to creating orbital hotels, new ambitious proposals are now regularly announced. And shortly, for only the price of a small home, anyone will be able to take a suborbital flight. In this month's story, while investigating an anomaly in the size of the information packets being sent from a commercial Mars project, an engineer discovers a hidden signal, which turns out to be something very unexpected. We now invite you to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories 67, Lifeline. Somewhere and sometime, the only return ticket might be for the radio signal.
The signal cut in and out as Yara determinedly adjusted the filters. Then suddenly, it was there, as plain as day, if you knew what to look for. Just as she had known it would be. A small extra data stream. Something that had no business being the packets.
Finally! Gotcha!
She happily muttered to herself.
You're my ticket to a pay raise.
Yara slapped her hand on the workstation in delight. Sending and receiving space communications protocol specifications, or SCPS, data packets, was a costly endeavor, and it was her job to ensure that every byte was accounted for. Curious, Yara instructed her terminal to decode the signal and found, surprisingly, an audio track. That didn't make any sense to her. Audio took up much more bandwidth than text, and it was the extra weight that had first caught her attention. If someone had wanted to send a surreptitious message, at just over the threshold of statistical error, text would have been much harder to detect.
It's almost like they wanted to be found,
she said to herself, then told her computer to play the file. Relayed through orbital satellites, while Mars was behind the sun, a young, tentative voice began to speak to her from nearly 400 million kilometers away.
If you're hearing this, I haven't buried the track too deep to be found.
The boy almost apologized.
I wanted it to be discovered, but only by the right kind of person. Hopefully you're that person. Someone who is curious when they notice something subtly amiss. Someone who is willing to help and is open-minded. Not like the brain-dead packet guards at transmission and reception. They've worked for the consortium so long that they're asleep at the wheel and don't care anymore. I bet I could have embedded a complete second show in the stream without them noticing.
Yara grimaced. She hated the name Packet Guard. It was a popular derogatory term that made it sound like all she did was sit in a chair in a grubby back office, occasionally glancing at security screens between watching netvids. She was a signal integrity engineer and was definitely not asleep.
The joke's on you, kid,
she told the empty air, and was about to fill out a report, forward it along with the message to corporate security, when what the boy said next made her stop and reconsider.
All I want to do is talk. It's really lonely here. My name is Amir. I was voted off the front lineup of Lifeline almost a year ago. Once you've been bumped, you become a leper. No one wants to associate with you, in case the bad luck rubs off and their votes drop off too. Even my family avoids me. Please, send a message back the same way you got this one.
The kid pleaded, then the message ended. Yara hadn't known that colonists had become superstitious. However, she suspected that there was a lot of things behind the eyes of the camera that had been kept off the interplanetary net over the years. She leaned back and blew out her breath. This was not what she had expected. A private back channel loaded with black market scientific data, maybe. Colonists had been known to run illegal side schemes to try and raise enough money for a return trip. But this was only a lonely kid. Feeling suddenly sympathetic, Yara decided not to report it. Another few days of extra data charges was really just pocket change for the consortium, she rationalized. Maybe Amir had found the right person after all. Leaning in close to her console, Yara told it to record an audio file.
Hi, Amir. My name is Yara. I didn't know that you had been bumped, but I don't follow the feed. Let's talk.
Yara briefly considered telling Amir where she worked, but decided against it.
Recording stop. Encode package into outbound stream at same point as inbound extra data and send,
she commanded, then went on to other tasks, careful to close the packets she had been examining in case another signal engineer came by. If Amir was at his terminal, it would minimally take 40 minutes to hear back. Yara hadn't started out to become a signal integrity engineer. She had just fallen into it by default. It was low-paying and stable, but repetitive. In short, she had to admit, it was a boring, unglamorous job. And yes, there were those in the ranks that had helped create the popular perception that signal integrity engineers were simply digital rent-a-cops, but their job was crucial to the operation of the interplanetary net. And the interplanetary net was the glue that kept the lunar bases, orbital stations, and Mars connected to the net. It was what made Lifeline possible. Taking communications in college, Yara had fantasized that she would become a travel writer, wandering the world, posting her stories on the net. A romantic but wholly impractical profession, especially in the first years after her graduation, when the world economy was collapsing and people were more interested in their next meal than independent vid streams. So when a consortium of entertainment companies had dreamed up the largest and riskiest media spectacle ever conceived, Lifeline, she had briefly considered putting her name into the draw. But it wasn't a true lottery. The producers were looking for dynamic risk takers who looked good on camera and whom the directors believed the audience would relate to and care about when the inevitable accidents occurred. Yara knew she wasn't that kind of person. As an alternative to a life in poverty and obscurity, in the dark times when the show was announced, for millions, Lifeline was an opportunity for instant fame and free room and board for the rest of their lives. It was a potential goldmine for the consortium, a global distraction from the hard times that would guarantee large audiences and huge advertising revenues. There was no need to pay the actors, and there was no way for the talent to worm out of their contracts or make unreasonable demands if they became net stars. It was a one-way trip, and the ability to sustain the colony was tied to ad revenue from the net streams they would create. The arrangement was guaranteed to make the selected few work hard, take risks, and entertain. As it turned out, conditions in the colony rose and fell with the popularity of the feed and resultant frequencies of the resupply capsules. Yara knew she had made the right choice. Instead of wasting her time in the lottery, she had applied for one of the Earth's side support jobs in a new emerging field, the management of the interplanetary net. Yes, it was boring, but she couldn't imagine having the very air you breathe being dependent on some machine whose spare parts delivery was tied to the whims of a sometimes fickle audience tens of millions of kilometers away. Perhaps that was why she was sympathetic to Amir's plea. The notification icon pulsed on the screen, indicating that new packets had arrived. Yara looked around to make sure no one had come into the control room, then had the terminal decode and play the message.
Yara, it's so great to hear from you. I've been repeating my message for days. I was starting to think that no one had noticed it.
15 days, to be exact, kid, and I noticed right away. It was almost too obvious. You're fortunate that I was the one to stumble on it.
Yara whispered to herself. The encoders at the Hala's base were over 2 decades old, and their tolerance were loose compared to contemporary gear. They needed replacing, but with Lifeline's audience size at an all-time low, resupply had been reduced to essentials only. She wondered if Amir knew how obsolete the colony's gear was, but guessed he didn't. It wouldn't be in the consortium's interest to let anyone out there know. The message continued.
Like I told you, my votes were the lowest in the front lineup last year, so I got bumped. I miss my family and friends. I don't get to see them that often. The problem with being bumped is that you are only supposed to appear in the stream as an extra. That means not being around most of the time. So to get out of the way of the cameras, you're sent over to the old temporary prefab shelters at the first landing site. They're mostly buried now, so radiation is not as much of an issue as it used to be, but they leak like a sieve, and we have to spend most of our time patching microfractures, so the air is always too thin and oxygen too low. It's a dangerous place to be. No one here is willing to take off their EV suit for any length of time. There's tons of room at the main site. It was overbuilt. And now since no new people are being sent...
His voice trailed off.
Anyway, we all want out. We could have spent our time at Halas doing something useful, like working on the farms or in the new manufacturing plant or something, instead of just trying to breathe. Guess they're worried that we might try to sneak in a scene if we were over there, get a few extra votes that they figure we don't deserve. But we don't even have the tools to work. The 3D printers we used to make patches wore out years ago, so we are improvising by recycling plastics from the resupply landers. The only good thing about being here is that it has the transmission dish, and a lot of the old comm gear still works, as you can tell. As an extra, how do you get the votes to get back into the lineup? That's why it takes so long to get out of the temp shelters. But I've got an idea. I just need some help Earthside. Please, will you help me, Yara? I could end up dying here in an accident. They don't report the off-camera deaths. You probably didn't know that.
Message abruptly ended. Yara realized that she had never thought about what happened to the people who were voted out of the lineup. They were just simply not in the feed for a long time. There had been rumors, but up to now, that was all she had heard. She became angry as she rolled Amir's words over in her mind. "Record new message," Yara commanded.
"I'll help, but only on the condition that you never tell anyone my name. Message end. Encode packet and send in next available slot."
Even after all the years she had spent working on the interplanetary net, Yara was still not used to the delay. It made communication asynchronous. Not really conversations at all, just a series of one-way messages that lacked the spontaneity of a real face-to-face interaction. She leaned back in her chair and wondered if this had been a mistake. She needed to think. Amir would be what, 14 or 15 years old, at most? Yara asked herself and tried to remember what he looked like on the vidstream, but couldn't quite picture him. There were quite a few kids now. They tended to play support roles, and she had never been a big vid watcher or a fan of the show. But the age would be about right. No kids had been born at Halas Base in the first decade. The producers didn't think that the show's then mostly under 25 audience would relate to a reality show that followed the mundane daily routine of raising a family, even if it was on a hostile alien planet. But as the show's demographics shifted over the years, the rules changed. And in the 10th season, the first kids and the first true Martians were born under the ever-present eyes of the camera. Amir would have been one of them, Yara concluded, although she couldn't remember the episode where he had been born or who his parents were. Up until 3 years ago, Lifeline had been successful enough to support the launch of regular expeditions that were spun off as six-month miniseries, which followed the lives of the immigrants crammed into each tiny capsule. Expedition 9 crashed on landing when its parachutes failed to open, killing two of the most popular characters to date. The heightened sense of danger only increased the audience size to new heights, and that was when Yara had, in disgust, stopped watching. From then on, she just did her work, and up until today, had never peered into the data that she shepherded through the large dish antennas onto the net. Over the years, she had come to rationalize her job as the real lifeline that kept communication between the colonists and Earth alive. But in the back of her mind, her consciousness insisted on her complicity. So yes, she was taking a risk helping Amir, but it was her way of easing her guilt. The terminal beeped, interrupting her train of thought. More packets had been received. Yara checked the control room again. No one else was around. "Isolate additional audio signal and decode," she told her terminal, then went for coffee. By the time she arrived back in the control room, the message was queued for playback. Yara closed the door, something she normally didn't do, then slipped into her chair, ripped the paper lid off the top of the coffee, took a quick sip, pulled her headset on, and touched the playback icon on the terminal screen.
"Hi, Yara,"
the young voice enthusiastically cracked through the small speakers.
"Thanks for agreeing to help. You'll never know how much this means to me and to my family. It gives me a chance. I have access to the net from here. This gear must have been an admin terminal once and was forgotten when this part of the base was decommissioned. It's unfiltered access. At this distance, it can take days to find stuff on the net. But I don't have much else to do. The only restriction is upstream. I can't upload or post anything. Guess that was to keep admins from sending stuff without going through the official channels. Anyway, I found a very large active Lifeline group, and I want you to post something there for me. I've attached a text file and the URL of the site. Let me know if you got this, and if you'll post it for me. Please help me, Yara."
Yara opened the text file. It was a simple proposition to do anything that the audience wanted in return for enough votes to get Amir back into the lineup. On the surface, it seemed straightforward enough, but the more Yara thought about it, the more she realized the potential danger of allowing a somewhat jaded audience to control your fate. She moved her chair as close to the terminal as she could get, then in a quiet voice started a new recording.
"Hi, Amir. I did get your message and the post. But I need to think about this. I'm not sure that it's a good idea. End message. Encode and send in next available packet."
Yara tried to massage the mounting tension in her forehead. It was the end of her shift and the end of her week. She needed to think. Yara closed and encrypted all her open files, wiped the transmission records for her outgoing messages, turned the terminal off, and left for the weekend. Like a mind worm, the messages from Amir circled through Yara's head and wouldn't let go. She wasn't sure what to do, and now wished that she had simply sent the intercepted packets along to someone higher up to deal with. She didn't want the responsibility, nor did she feel that she really understood enough to make the right call. For the first time in years, late one evening, Yara found herself watching the Lifeline live stream. A ceiling-mounted camera looked down into a tiny apartment, where a middle-aged couple was sitting gloomily at a metallic table. The camera zoomed in to show tears running down the face of the woman. Yara didn't recognize either person. They must have arrived on one of the later expeditions after she had stopped watching, Yara reasoned. She listened to their hushed, intense conversation. The woman had been bumped, and this was her last few hours at Hala's base. An intimate moment voyeuristically shared by millions. In revulsion, Yara closed the stream. When she arrived back at work Monday evening, the notification queue on her terminal was full. Yara looked at the sizes of the packets. They were all the same. Amir had apparently been sending a message over and over again, hoping for her to answer. She checked to make sure she was alone, then had the terminal decode the first packets.
"Yara, it's the only option I have. Please respond. You're my only hope."
"Record new message,"
Yara immediately commanded.
"Amir, I don't want to be part of this. I've never agreed with Lifeline's premise. It's morally questionable, but I think you're making a mistake. Your idea? It's just a more extreme take on the same theme. It won't resolve anything, and might even make matters worse for you. I don't feel that I have the right to prevent you from trying to change your circumstances. I had to think long and hard before I posted your message. I did it through a proxy, so it can't be traced back to me. But that's it. I'm done. I urge you to walk away from this, Amir. Try something else. Think hard. There has got to be an alternative." End recording.
For 3 weeks, there were no more messages, and Yara thought that the whole incident might be over. until she received an internal memo about rumors which had been spreading across the net. All signal engineers had been directed to keep a close eye on the content in the feed. So Yara felt almost nauseous as the first pre-show packets began to arrive. She hoped that Amir had taken her advice, but realized that she didn't know how far he might go, or how desperate he really was. On the other hand, she knew how extreme and potentially sadistic some of the audience could be. It was a bad mix at best, and a potential disaster at worst. Yara nervously checked her terminal's chronometer. The packet containing the start of tonight's stream was still 19 minutes away. An alert flashed on the terminal screen. A pre-show test packet had been caught in her filters, and she didn't need her analytics program to see that it was way too large. She wondered why Amir would do such an obvious thing. It guaranteed detection. And then it suddenly made sense.
"He wants to make sure this one is found," she muttered to herself as her stomach knotted with the realization that he had ignored her plea. "Terminal, play file," she reluctantly commanded.
Almost immediately, Amir's determined voice took over the headset, and the image of an earnest young teen filled her screen.
"Post this,"
Amir coldly commanded.
"Suggestions from the net have been tabulated, and by overwhelming demand, the audience of Lifeline has requested,"
he consciously added a dramatic pause,
"that I should suck Martian air in today's stream. Watch for the repair team in the background after the second commercial break."
The message abruptly ended. Yara's heart tried to leap out of her chest. No one had ever intentionally opened their faceplate on the surface in the 25 years of Lifeline. Yes, there had been accidental deaths, especially in the early years. But the show was now more of a soap opera than a high-risk adventure reality show. Colonists got voted off the feed, that was all. And she now knew what that meant. But the people who had been bumped could still survive, albeit at a marginal subsistence level. Sucking air meant, at minimum, permanent facial disfiguration from exploded tissue in the thin atmosphere. And more likely, much worse.
"They want to see someone die or be maimed on camera?"
she yelled in disgust, and felt like she was about to throw up. Then panic set in. She had to stop this. Yara placed a priority message in the next outbound packet, warning the Marsside director, and commanded her terminal to send it. Next, she forwarded a copy of Amir's message to Earthside admin. There would still be time to prevent this, she tried to convince herself. Her message would arrive at Mars just minutes after the feed started.
"They can stop this if they want to,"
she muttered to herself. Too anxious to sit, Yara paced around her workstation, waiting for the first feed packet to arrive, hoping that her message had been read and the grotesque event stopped. Time seemed to crawl by, but far too soon her terminal flashed. Yara logged back on and saw that her message packet had been rejected by a relay satellite in orbit between Earth and Mars. Oddly, the satellite had stopped accepting outbound traffic. In frustration, she dropped her head into her hands. There was nothing more she could do. Unwilling to witness the fatal stunt, Yara logged off sick and left. She was waiting for the train to take her home when the flat screens that usually displayed advertising along the wall on the opposite side of the platform suddenly switched over to the Lifeline stream. The netcast had already started. She wondered how word had leaked out, then remembered her message to admin, and shuddered at the thought that the company had cynically decided to use this to regain audience share.
"They must have intentionally blocked my outbound packet, then leaked Amir's message to the net,"
she said so loudly that several people standing near her briefly looked away from the screens to scowl at her. Yara wanted to leave, but a tiny spark of hope prevented her from looking away. Minutes passed while she helplessly waited for the inevitable. When the second commercial ended, with her heart racing, Yara scanned the background of the scene until her eyes settled on a group of colonists in environmental suits working on a disabled transport. Even through the heavy protective layers of an EV suit and 400 million kilometers of near vacuum, Yara could sense the tension in the body of a small figure who was standing watching the repairs. Then in slow motion, the EV suit turned toward the camera. Yara felt that its faceplate was staring accusingly at her, Slowly, as if in a dream, one hand began to move up toward the release on the visor.
Come on, see it, stop it,
muttered Yara, trying to will the Mars side crew to realize what was about to happen and intervene. Instead, the gloved hand reached its target and popped the clasp open. Yara's stomach lurched as a small cloud of frozen air puffed out, obscuring the helmet. Instinctively, she looked away, then noticed other people on the platform, staring and pointing. Reluctantly, she turned back to see chaos erupt on the screen. But instead of rushing to help, the other colonists ran out of the frame, leaving a small frozen figure with an open visor alone in the center of the shot. Yara squinted and moved closer to the edge of the platform to confirm what she thought she saw. An empty helmet. There was no one inside. The EV suit had been remote controlled. Relief and confusion surged through her. Everyone on the platform stood silently watching, waiting for something else to happen. Another small suited figure walked into the frame and up to the camera. The name tag was visible. Amir, Yara read aloud, half expecting him to hear. Silently, Amir unrolled a hand-painted sign and held it out in front of him. Murmurs instantly spread along the platform. The message read, "You helped us decide. We quit. We can survive without you." The screens along the platform burst into static as the signal abruptly ended. Yara stood for a moment, then reached into her bag, pulled out her handheld, and without hesitation, texted the consortium, "I quit."
Thanks for listening to Makeshift Story 66, Somewhere, Sometime, Lifeline. We hope that you enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us or write a review on iTunes. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. The opening and closing theme is Podsafe Music by David H., and the story was read by Mitchell Too. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons Attribution, No Derivative License, which means that you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.